The man, the mystery, the Argentinian action figure himself has returned from vacation. Javier, we were all very confused last week, man. I was on your Instagram and I was like, he's in a pool, but he's got a winter coat on in the mountains. It was just all very confusing. Where did you go and why were you not here? You abandoned us.
Come on. I mean, have you never been in a, like a, you know, a pool in the cold? With hot water?
I mean, I'm going to be honest, it's I have not. Sounds great, though. It's like a hot tub.
It's great.
It's just a big hot tub.
It's like a hot tub, but it's a bigger hot tub. I was
welcome back, dude. Was it fun? Was it relaxing?
It was awesome. It was relaxing. It was honestly exhausting. Did a lot of skiing.
I feel so bad for you. It was so exhausting to be on vacation. You can go right back there. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. Welcome to Cannabis Insider. Yeah. Don't you dare. Welcome to Cannabis Insider. Javier Haas, Elliot Lane here, bringing you your bi-weekly dose of cannabis news and executive insights from around the space. We are launching a super cool partnership today, every Tuesday, from here until they decide not to grace us with their presence.
Eternity.
No, yeah, from here until eternity. Damn right.
Eternum
partnership. Yeah, we are going to be featuring one of the most prolific investors in the cannabis space, Morgan Paxia, is going to join us today to start the show off, give us some of his insights about what's happening. I'm super excited to ask him about Q2 earnings. And then after that, we have Mr. Cannabis Law himself, Dustin Robinson, also very active in the psychedelic space. Excited for this show, these insights. But before that, let's get us started, AT.
Yep.
All right, Javi, I say we get right to it. What do you think, man?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's bring Mr. Paxia onto the show.
Morgan, what is up, our friend? How are you?
All right. I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be a part of this Tuesday segment.
Yeah, great.
We are no longer having you on. You're a part of the show now.
Oof. All right.
Yes, Javi. Yeah, Morgan. Seriously, though, man, we've always had our shows at the same time at 4. We decided to move ours up to 1, made room for this awesome partnership. Very excited to have Poseidon on because, honestly, you guys have direct insights that obviously Javier and I don't. So excited to hear from you. Let's start with what's topical, man. I mean, we've had Q2 earnings over the past 2 weeks. For me, it seems decently positive. Obviously, yeah. You need a lot in the space to move one way or the other. But Q2 earnings, man, what's your take?
You know, it was we're about what, halfway through, maybe three quarters of the way through. It's been It's been flying. It's been busy. I have been pretty pleased with a lot of the continued financial discipline. You know, part of the duration of a capital tightness has just really driven people to get super focused, and you're seeing it play through in the numbers. Lots of discussion on the conference calls around inventory management, balance sheet work, and some are even talking about growth while doing these things. And I think it's a really big differentiator that's really becoming apparent in our industry is those that are good capital allocators are proceeding forward on both sides, from a fundamental and a growth perspective, while others are really still focused on trying to figure out what their core business is and what it's going to look like going forward. So there's still a lot of work to be done. Some of these markets are still way over saturated with capacity. And you're seeing that, you know, hearing that in the discussions with, you know, trying to get inventory levels down. At the start of this year, that was something we were very focused on is what that looks like, because it has a direct result into wholesale pricing, which has a direct result into what the revenue looks like. You know, if you take Michigan as one of the best outliers of the most price compression, but with the most unit growth overcoming that and continues to hit record highs. So, you know, kudos to Michigan, but it still makes for a very tough environment to really drive fundamental business with prices just going down like that. But in other markets where we're seeing price stabilization, it's doing wonders for these businesses because they've gotten leaner, they've gotten more focused, and price stabilization with any kind of unit growth is really just driving bottom line results. And so we're seeing that. The other thing that was interesting with with companies in our space has been tax policy. Most, I'd say, are getting religion around that. You know, you gotta pay your taxes. Some are not. Depends on your position. You know, from a balance sheet perspective, if you can. So there is some divergence there. You know, as an example, Verano was one of the most aggressive with their, you know, allowing a pretty sizable tax accrual, but now they're getting very focused on it and paying it down. So Verano is one of the more interesting companies, I think, right now from a growth perspective and super focus on balance sheet. So very excited to see how they're navigating through this environment. I think it's a great company. I'll pause there. See if you have any thoughts or questions.
Yeah, I do. You mentioned, you know, some of the best capital allocators, right? And looking at earnings from the past couple of days, some of the better earnings in my opinion were like Glass House, Clever Leaves, Safe Harbor. Who do you see as good capital allocators right now? And again, for anyone watching, this is not a recommendation. This is just analysis.
Yeah. I mean, I think GTI remains the best of breed, you know, just because like over the years of this, if you look at their balance sheet, if you're building an operating company in cannabis, and especially in the US, the biggest impacts to your bottom line are taxes, which everybody has to deal with, right? Can't not. Mm-hmm. How you might manage that, as we were just talking about, is maybe a different story, but eventually you have to pay taxes. And the other big input is interest expense. And so, you know, for these companies that if you get overlevered or your cost of capital is a lot higher and you're overlevered, your ability to generate cash flow is very hard. And so if you look at GTI, they are, you know, consistently the best performer in managing that because they have, you know, they've made good allocations in the key markets and good, you know, building a good vertical, very mindful of how much upstream exposure they have. But they also have some of the lowest, if not the lowest, of the large operators from an interest rate, interest expense perspective. So yeah, I just think they're, you know, very high quality team and standing out relative to the cohort. You know, another thing we do look at from a capital allocating kind of perspective is there's this pesky thing people love to talk about, which is adjusted EBITDA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when there's a lot of liberties in that A, it's like, is it really as good as it looks? And so you have to peel back the onion a little bit and actually see what management is deciding to be included in those adjustments. And what does EBITDA really look like? Because that's really a driver of operating cash flows and what bottom line looks like. So,
yeah,
you know, I think there's just, these are complex businesses and it's really hard to take it from face value. And certainly after a cycle like this, we've lost a lot of analyst coverage. So now there's even less being talked about with these companies. So it's leaving a lot of folks with less resources to try to understand who's doing what. And in a time when, you know, markets have just continued to be largely under pressure, it makes it even cloudier to understand who is making good decisions or not.
Yeah. I think Javi has a good follow-up question, but just really quickly before we get to that, you know, it seems like numbers keep changing as to what we pay attention to, right? So when I first jumped in, it was revenues sequentially and then year over year, and it shifted mm-hmm. to adjusted EBITDA. Now it's shifting to free cash flow, operating cash flow. What becomes important next? I mean, assuming that levels off, we get OCF good. Do we go back to looking at revenue growth? Do we go back at looking at total margin and profit? You know, what should investors be looking at as to seeing where these companies are going next?
Yeah, I love this question because it is really an important point about where do we go from here? And when you build good business and you've got that baseline, now we want to start talking about what are the growth drivers, because if you got a good core fundamental business and then you start applying growth again, that should be very accretive. And so, you know, our industry and especially the largest companies had to downshift from, you know, mega growth down to almost no growth. And that was a very aggressive shift. And that caused all kinds of, you know, internal work that had to get done. But now we've got to start talking about growth again and getting back to double digit growth, because this is a growth industry. This is what people are coming here to to invest in, but now you're getting profitable growth. I think that's going to be the new term that will become, you know, so much more commonplace, is profitable growth. So you still got to have a good fundamental business, but we want to see growth. And the companies like, again, GTI and Verano, you know, two top tier companies that are showing both of that, you know, their go aheads look quite favorable. And if you're not starting to show visibility into top line growth with that, you know, the profitable growth, as I'm mentioning, I think that's going to be a big driver in separating out this market.
You know, to close it up today, I was thinking, one of the things you mentioned was we're losing analyst coverage. Mm-hmm. What are the factors determining this? Is it just like maybe TD acquiring Cantor and just like not their interests anymore? Or is there like an underlying reason that you can draw, you know, some kind of connection between all these occurrences?
I think Viridian does a really good job tracking transactions in our industry. And if you just look at the activity, it's down substantially. And if you think about how a bank functions, you need the transactions to generate the fees to cover the cost centers, which are analysts, right? They're not generally driving revenue. Their job is to write research. And so they are paid. They're not generating fees necessarily to the degree that, you know, the banking team is, that's selling transactions and things like that. And while transactions are very low, these banks are trying to find ways to cut costs. And so unfortunately that does come at the cost of headcount and, you know, an analyst. So until we start to see banking activity really picking up, you know, whether it's M&A, whether it's IPOs, whether it's secondaries, whatever that can generate revenue, I do think it'll be thin for a while on the analyst mm-hmm. side, and it'll probably be slow because they're going to want to see not only, you know, some initials, but some continued transaction activity to notably pick up before that'll come back. So we haven't seen any banking reform. I don't think there's any banking reform period happening. I think we'll probably likely see something else that would probably make banking reform unnecessary because it'll get covered in some other manner. When that happens, I have no idea, but it does make for a much narrower kind of capital environment for arguably mm-hmm. for a while longer.
And it's almost like a complex situation, right? It's like a catch 22 kind of vicious circle as well, right? Because analysts not covering the space, not showing enough interest also is affecting transaction levels. And then transaction levels are feeding into the fact that more analysts are discontinuing their coverage. So we're stuck for a bit here.
Yep. So that it cycles down and eventually it bottoms and then the cycle goes the other way. It's just, you know, I remember back in the great financial crisis, you know, went through a similar cycle like this, and it felt like there was never an end, but inevitably cycles do change and things will find a floor and rebuild from there. It's economic cycles are like that too, when, you know, we haven't felt an economic cycle in a long time. So, but that does happen. So I don't know when, but you're right. For now, it's kind of self-reinforcing for a period of time because the volumes are anemic in the space for public companies. And so it's just kind of we're still cycling through it. And unfortunately, it was part of the rationale of I'm sure you've seen the news by now, but, you know, why we shut PSDN down. And it's just unfortunate that the environment is, it just falls in the best interest of the shareholders and that strategy to call it versus continuing on, because we just don't mm-hmm. we don't really know where we will get through this or when, and is that right for them? So that's, you know, so these are the right points of the things that we've been thinking about.
You know, Morgan, it's been a great introduction to your perspective, and I think I'm very excited to continue this. I mean, I'd love to get your take next week perhaps on where you know, any shift in rescheduling takes us, recreational marijuana, and what that looks like. I'd love to get your view on the health of private companies, and what you're seeing there. There's so much to chat about, but there's so much opportunity here, you know, and it's worth continuing to talk about. And obviously we do need some sort of legislative movement, but at the end of the day, you know, hearing from lobbyists ourselves, this is normal political timelines when it comes to shifting any type of emerging market, alcohol, gun reform. It's all a decade plus, you know, so I wonder if people are jumping ship, perhaps a little too soon. But I think it's all subjective at this point, but I think this is going to be a really interesting segment going forward, and I appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here. Love to hit on those topics for sure. We got plenty more to talk about. But yeah, this industry has a bright future ahead. It's just once these storm clouds abate. But yeah, so we'll chat more next week.
Thank you, Morgan. Thanks for being here, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Remember.
Awesome. Javi, that's a great start to the segment, man. Really, really happy.
I love it. Every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, we'll have Poseidon Investment Management sharing the top insights in cannabis. If someone knows this industry, it's the Poseidon team. Mark your calendars.
Amen to that. All right, y'all. We have one more amazing guest for you here today. Really, really excited to welcome over Dustin Robinson, the head of Mr. Cannabis Law and the head of Mr. Psychedelics Law, and he runs a psychedelic investment fund, Eater Investments. Super pumped for this. Let's get him over. Dustin, how are you, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Great, great to have you. My friend, I have to jump right in here. Right. Cause, we'll get back into the investment side here shortly. Cause I know you have a lot of thoughts on that, but I got the question we just got in the chat is AI could be used for lots of things, diagnosing plants, bugs, mold, nutrient symptoms, et cetera. And I know you got a few thoughts on AI. Let's just dive right in, man. Talk to us about what you're seeing in AI in the cannabis space.
Oh, and by the way, why are we talking AI with a lawyer? It's also a good one.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, it goes into every single industry. You know, unfortunately, a lot of lawyers, I guess, aren't so business minded such to think of, you know, how is AI going to change it? But it certainly will. And in the legal industry, they used to do research in libraries out of books. You know, you'd have a legal issue, you'd have to go into treatises and annotations, and took a whole lot of time. And then with the advent of the internet, things got a little bit easier. You could use use the internet to research some items. Then you had the advent of like LexisNexis and Westlaw, which are like legal resources for attorneys. And I think the next coming is really AI. And there were a lot of attorneys, you know, decades ago with the advent of the internet that said, no, I'm sticking to the books. I want to go to the books. The books have the right answers. I'm not going to use the internet. And sure enough, everyone's got to kind of adapt and follow along. And I think that's going to be the path we take with AI. And I think the attorneys that didn't get out of the books and the libraries were somewhat left behind. So, you know, I've always been big on kind of following technology and making sure our business is at the cutting edge of technology. So we just have a few initiatives where we're ensuring that we're implementing different AI. Some of it is looking at different companies that are doing interesting things using AI for law firms like Document Crunch or Spellbook. They're basically helping use AI for, well, Spellbook uses AI for like contract drafting. So it'll kind of predict provisions and give you recommendations for provisions as you're drafting and stuff like that. But also having our own initiatives, it's such a nascent industry. And I'm also on the investing side. So I've started to diligence and look at a lot of different AI companies. And, you know, I saw that there's really a lack in a lot, especially in the cannabis space, that what my law firm does is so particular. For example, drafting applications in a given state, you know, a lot of that could be automated. Some of the intake that we're doing could be automated with AI. A lot of what we're doing is really internal to the firm. A lot of the AI we're using is really to streamline processes. But yeah, I'm super excited about the potential for AI for law firms specifically. But absolutely, there's no doubt it's going to play a role in the cannabis industry as well.
Is it mainly content oriented or are there trends that it predicts? I'm curious, like, you know, if you think about AI for the industry at large, obviously you can streamline efficiencies, you know, in terms of, you know, cutting down time on social posts for marketers or, you know, things, contract drafting, as you were saying. But I'm curious, is there anything that we're not talking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, I don't want to bore people with the operations of a law firm, but you know, even when we did the Florida application, you know, we just got done with drafting Florida applications. And part of that, we had, you know, 30 people on our org chart. We had a whole list of questions every person needed to fill out. We kept in an Excel file. All the questions are in Excel file so we could sum up and be able to make representations that, you know, we have 1 million square feet of cultivation authority. We've produced, you know, hundreds of thousands of grams of edibles, you know, so we were kind of collecting all this data. And so we're building some resources like that through AI. You could very easily, and it's really machine learning, you could take that information and have it automatically updated within your application. So we're looking at streamlining a lot of different activities. Whenever there's data entry, we're looking, you know, even client intake, when we sign up a client, a lot of information we ask, we got to put it into our billing system, Clio, we got to put it into QuickBooks. There's all these different processes that have to take place just with client intake. And so we're basically streamlining a lot of the stuff. We're using different AI tools.
You know, one of the things, I love AI, just like as a disclosure right here, but you know, one of the things I've been looking into and actually doing some stories on is hallucination, right? That when the AI, whether it's GPT or Bard or whatever you're using, fabricates information. And there was this very famous case that was Meta versus Avianca. So, you know, they were suing, or there was this case against an airline. And they had an issue with ChatGPT fabricating cases that didn't exist, right? What are some of the risks of utilizing AI in you know, legal cases related to cannabis or psychedelics? And what can we do to ensure that we have factually accurate information at the time of using AI and leveraging it as a tool?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before I started my law firm, I was helping run a manufacturing company. We had plants all throughout the country. We're doing almost $50 million in revenue. And we'd always bring in new processes for manufacturing. We had a whole quality control team and whatnot. But whenever we brought in a new machine, you do quality checks, right? You just don't go straight. You buy the machine, you turn it on and just start sending buckets out the door, right? You do all these quality checks. So I think with a new technology like AI, I know our team, we're fact checking everything. Like there's no reliance on it, right? So it's interesting because a lot of people are asking, are we recognizing like efficiencies? It's actually quite the opposite. We're actually spending more money right now and we're spending more time with this technology because until we get fully comfortable and we fully trust it, you can't just let it out and just, you know, have full reliance on it. So I think, you know, the big risk is, you know, some of the information is not accurate, right? There was that famous case, I think you're referencing, where a lawyer, you know, used AI to draft some sort of a pleading in a case, and he cited to cases that didn't even exist. I mean, it's just kind of shocking that an attorney would ever do that. But you got to check your sources. You got to fact check the AI. You can't just fully rely on it. But I think the idea is that as you become more comfortable with it, as it gets smarter, you understand what it's good at, you understand what it's bad at, you can start giving it a little bit more leniency, a little bit more trust. But in these beginning days, I definitely recommend everyone fact check and anything they're doing with AI. Even, you know, you guys are on the marketing side. I mean, if you guys are using AI to draft an article or helping you draft an article, giving you guys ideas, you know, you don't just simply blindly rely on it. And just the same for lawyers. You can't blindly rely on the AI, at least not at this point.
Dustin, I'd love to shift gears a little bit. You know, not to call any one company out, because there's a lot happening in the space legally right now. There's a lot of severe issues, it seems. You know, not paying taxes, obviously workplace safety, you know, license fights in Alabama. I mean, take your pick, right? I feel like lawyers are decently busy in the space right now. But is this a maturation, a little bit of a trial by fire that's happening right now in the space? Or is this standard corporate happenings through other industries? I mean, how do you compare this to, you know, other CPG industries? Or is cannabis somewhat unique right now?
Yeah, when I first started my career, I worked at Holland & Knight in their commercial lit department. And so it was constantly dealing with business disputes, right? And I always tell people, like, we set up a lot of partnerships, you know, most of it's in the cannabis space. But prior to that, before I worked in cannabis, we've done a lot of partnerships, we've seen a lot of disputes. And we work with a lot of startups. I always warn people before getting into partnership, oftentimes they lead to dispute. Oftentimes, you know, it's, I would say more times than not, partnerships don't go according to plan, right? And it's important you deal with that really on the front end. And that's what an operating agreement is for, a shareholder agreement, you know, this different legal drafting. So the reality is business disputes are very common in all industries. I think what's happening though is, you know, when markets go down, when things are working, all business transactions, everyone's making money, there's not really a lot to complain about, right? But when the markets are going down and businesses are failing, you know, the first thing you're doing is looking at your contracts and seeing if, you know, someone's not upholding, you know, their obligations within a contract. So when you see these market downturns, you're going to see more litigation, more business disputes. But I really don't think it's so particular to cannabis. I will say cannabis, you know, being that it's a gray, you know, not a gray market, but it's still federally illegal, right? So I think, you know, unfortunately, I think people have that perspective. I'm already doing something somewhat illegal. So they feel a little bit more openness to the, you know, maybe push the envelope a little bit more and do something a little bit further illegal. You know, whereas if this was federally legal, you're operating a legal business and you're, you know, focused on compliance and all that stuff. I think maybe just it's more like a psyche thing. Like mentally, you're not going to be as willing to maybe go outside the lines if you're operating in an industry that's legal. So I think there is a little bit of that going on within the cannabis industry. But I do also think the fact that the markets are getting hit so hard over the past few years, and, you know, business plans just aren't panning out the way people expect it. We're not seeing the federal changes that people have been waiting for so long. And as a result, you know, there's a lot of disputes, and also the laws are so complex. These business transactions we create are so complex, and every state is different. Every part of the supply chain is different. And so it kind of lends itself, like, a lot of lawyers are used to using like templates for a supply contract. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in the cannabis industry. Hmm. If you're doing a supply contract for someone in New York or someone in Florida, it's going to be totally different depending on what state you're in. And I think a lot of lawyers miss a lot of the provisions, and they're not anticipating some of the disputes that might happen. And that's kind of why I think there was a need for a law firm that really focuses on this space, so that we can anticipate those potential disputes, we could write it into the contract.
Looking at the market and the recent news, right? One thing that I noticed this year is that there's been a huge pickup in legal actions against companies, right? Whether it's like Cookies or Ease being sued, or even like class action lawsuits against Cheater. I mean, I'm not pinpointing any specific company, because again, it's up to you know, the justice system to decide who was in the wrong. But what we're seeing is every week, a bunch of different lawsuits are coming out. What is going on? I mean, is it that they're getting more visibility, that the industry is more mature, that many of these contracts were drawn up the wrong way, or like what's going on in the industry? Why is there suddenly so many disputes going on?
Yeah, I think part of it is the maturation of the industry, right? You enter into a contract in day one, it takes some time for disputes to arise around that contract. So I think it's really the culmination of the maturation of the industry, and once again, market conditions. I think when market conditions are not good, I mean, look, when a supplier is selling a product to a distributor, and the supplier could market up to the distributor by a high price, and the distributor can market up to the retailer, and everyone's making money along the supply chain, no one's really looking underneath, you know, the dress to see what's really going on. But then when everyone's margins are getting compressed, and, you know, companies have massive losses, they push it down all the way down the supply chain, and they look for a finger to point. And I think that's a little bit of what's going on. But a lot of it is just the maturation of the industry. And once again, I will say the regulations lend themselves to a lot of backdoor type of deals going on. You know, like, look, any lawyer that's ever been involved in any state that has, you know, a social equity thing is familiar with some of the backdoor deals that are going on. That, you know, I think most people, if not all people, would say almost all of the social equity frameworks that have been rolled out have been a failure. I don't think I would point to any one of them that I think has been a success. I don't think they've done well. Really what they've done is they've created a lot of backdoor deals. And that's just one example within the cannabis space, where, you know, there's certain regulations that almost push people to do, you know, deals they probably shouldn't be doing, and deals that they're not transparent about.
I got one last one, and it's kind of related to this one. One of the things that I've seen a lot of this year is like the copycat disputes, right? So like Skittles, lookalikes. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of the situation there, of course? Because, like, you know, intuitively, one thinks like, obviously Skittles or Oreos or whatever will not be okay with someone using a name that is almost identical to theirs and selling weed. which by the way could also be attractive to children, right? Like there's a bunch of elements there, but like legally, where do we stand? And is this something you can do in America? And is it that you know, regulators are looking at cannabis more closely than other brands, or is this something that you can't do in general?
No, I mean, you can't do this. And I think this goes back to my point before. I think a lot of these companies, a lot of them are like Delta 8 companies, not even like marijuana licensed companies that are regulated yep. by a department, right? So it's like, it's companies that are already working in a very, very gray area. So they're like, I'm already, you know, maybe, you know, marketing CBD as a dietary supplement, which we all know you can't do per the FDA, but the FDA is not enforcing it. So I'm already doing that illegally. So what's the big deal if I knock off Skittles brand, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's kind of that slippery slope. Once you're kind of not being compliant with the law a little bit, you're a little bit more inclined to, you know, take more steps, but it's clearly illegal. Yeah, you can't copy Skittles, Oreos. I mean, they're, forget about the fact that they're, you know, attracted to children, right? You just can't copy brands. There's trademark law. Even if you don't have a trademark mark on a product, there's common law that protects, you know, brand names from being knocked off. Just like if, you know, you wrote an article, Javi, and someone stole your article and, you know, made it sound like it was theirs, right? Like, you can't do that stuff. These are very straightforward laws that apply outside of the cannabis space. I just think when you're working within this gray area of cannabis, people are a little bit more prone to, you know, doing other improper activities. But yeah, all of our clients, if I ever found out that any of our clients was doing anything like that, I would terminate representation on that. I mean, that's so clearly illegal and not appropriate.
Amen, Dustin. It's interesting. You know, more of a comment here than a question, but like GMA was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, came out and basically called those products marijuana products. There's such a clear lack of education in terms of the relationship between these products mainstream that it's interesting and almost a positive when the DEA comes out with that letter or email today that basically says these synthesized cannabinoids are illegal in their minds. Now, they haven't done anything about it yet, so they're not technically illegal yet. But I think that's a precursor for what probably will happen, unfortunately, for them. I don't know if you have anything there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you on the marijuana side, right, over 0.3% Delta 9 THC, these companies that are licensed by the state, very highly regulated, have to file variances with departments. And, you know, every change they do is being monitored by the department. You know, those companies have a lot of like compliance work to do, but it's these companies that are really falling outside of that, that are selling, you know, THCA or Delta 8 or Delta 10. And I'm not knocking that side of the industry. You know, I think the whole plant, you know, should be decriminalized and whatnot, but mm-hmm. we won't go there. But you know, at the end of the day, those are the companies that in a lot of ways, they're not regulated. You know, there's people selling like straight up Delta 9 THC on a dry weight basis under 0.3% Delta 9 THC and arguing that that's falls under the 2018 Farm Bill. So you'll see a Trulieve store that is spending all this money, doing all this compliance work, has cameras in every corner, has security guards, and they're opened up right next to a store that is pretty much selling weed, but totally unregulated. So I think there's some cleaning up that needs to be done within the industry because there's a lot of, it's also, you can imagine how confusing it is to the consumers. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't understand like, do I need a medical marijuana card to go into Trulieve or why am I able to go into this other store and buy this synthetic? You know, they don't understand what synthetic even means. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an isomerization process. Or what does that mm-hmm. mean? So I think there's also just a lot of consumer confusion. So I think in a lot of ways, some of these minor cannabinoids, this whole industry that's emerged, it needs to be cleaned up in some form.
Yes. Dustin, it's been a pleasure, man. We are over time here, but let's have you on again because I'd love to get your thoughts on investing into the psychedelic space. And I think that's worth more than one question. Oh, yeah. But all that said, Dustin, very interesting place you sit in the industry. I know you're very active politically, legally, and honestly, entrepreneurially. So it's a really pleasure to have you. And we are looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Really appreciate you guys having me on. Always happy to come on whenever you guys want me on.
Thanks, Dustin. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Good one.
Awesome. A great, name too, great right? show, man. Oh, yeah. He has one of the best legal.
Talk about snagging up a good domain.
Yeah. You can't copy that, other lawyers. It's illegal. That said, Javi,
we'll
great show,
cannabis
man.
Law tomorrow.
Yes, two experts in the space. And honestly, we're going to keep it rolling, man. It's been exciting. We'll have Dustin on again soon. We do want to touch on the psychedelics industry. Does seem to be some pretty great growth there. But Javi, any last words for our listeners?
Obviously. Do you know what's happening in September in Chicago?
What's
can you guess, Mr. Elliot Lane? There you
is
go. BZCannabis.com, Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, is coming back to Chicago. September 27 and 28 at the Marriott Magnificent Mile. The best lineup we've ever had. I mean, it's honestly, sick, just like policymakers, CEOs, CFOs, branding experts, I don't know, celebrities, investors, a bunch of investors, right? If you're looking for money, it's here or it isn't. Like, it's nowhere else.
Amen. Y'all be there, be square, benzinga.com/cannabis for all your news throughout the day. Cannabis Daily, 5 minutes every morning for your headline updates. That's me. You can spend 5 more minutes with me every day. But appreciate y'all. We will see you again on Thursday for another phenomenal episode. And Javi's going to send us out with whatever he wants.
Happy birthday to you.
Drop your love
for Mr. Elliot Lane in the chat. His birthday was yesterday. And how many years? Is that how you say it?
In my early 30s. I am in my early 30s. I'm 30 for
celebrate?
The next decade. How about that?
Love it.
Thank you, Javi. I appreciate the love. Thank you all for listening, for watching, for tuning in. Share with your friends. Spread the love of cannabis. We just want to bring the information to everybody. Until Thursday, until tomorrow morning, if you watch Cannabis Daily, see you then. Peace. We'll be right back.